I recently read an article by a famous Buddhist monk who talked about these five precepts of Buddhism. Of course, Buddhism is a vast religion and has a lot of different ideas, but these five pertain to our daily life, how we should live our life. And applying these principles, one can then work towards evolution to a higher state of consciousness. I first have to improve what I am doing, and then only I can progress. So how do I improve my daily life? And these precepts are the same in various religions, in different forms, in the Ten Commandments, in the principles of the Bhagavad Gita, in the principles of Jainism, and different faiths, Judaism. They all have these same ideas in different forms. Some are emphasized more than others. I thought these would be helpful for us to apply in our life. So the first one is reverence for life. Reverence for life. And I think that is probably the most fundamental precept that one has to practice, where violence and killing or harming or hurting of any kind should be avoided. It starts in the mind. Violence or hatred or anger or greed or jealousy, they all start in the mind. And then from the mind, they then translate into selfish words, into hateful words, and into hateful actions, and eventually lead to killing. And this violence could be between individuals, could be between races, it could be between different religions, or it could be even violence towards different species. Say if I commit violence towards animals or birds or fish, or even just uselessly destroy plants, or even towards inanimate objects, you know, having reverence for my inanimate objects, taking care of my possessions, my things. So the idea comes from seeing that there is one. Everything is one. Everything is the creation of the Lord, and the one Lord himself, he alone was first, and then out of himself he created and became this whole universe. So everything that we see is nothing but the Lord himself, and including in me. So I first have to be non-violent towards myself, because we find that most of us are very hard upon ourselves. We become very critical of ourselves, and we have a lot of conflicting ideas and lot of, you know, different kinds of desires. And when we are not coordinated, when we are not thinking logically, then we find that the conflict starts. And so they say, first of all, you have to be peaceful. You have to be mindful. You have to watch your breath, and you have to be aware of the thoughts arising, so that, because if there is an angry thought or a hateful thought, it will hurt me first before it hurts anybody else. And along with that, I think vegetarianism, in my opinion, and also this particular monk who wrote this particular article, emphasized very strongly about vegetarianism. Because you may say, well, I do not kill the animal, but the fact that you are buying it or the fact that you are consuming it, you are contributing. Well, plants also have life. It's not that plants do not have life, and we need to eat something to live. But they say that the lowest form of life that you can eat, because an animal bleeds, it shows pain, you know, it has expresses emotions. That's why we don't eat cats and dogs, because we feel that they are closer to us. They are a higher form. So I think starts with vegetarianism. But again, then one should not become too proud. Oh, I am a vegetarian, so I am superior to others who are not. Because even a vegetarian, when he or she is boiling water to cook vegetables, there are so many organisms and germs and all that are dying in there. So one cannot be 100% non-violent. Even as I'm walking, I may be stepping on so many bacteria and germs and all. But the idea is that my effort should be towards non-violence, towards non-destruction. It's like I want to go north, so I use the North Pole Star. And I say I'm going to go north. I may not reach the North Pole Star, but at least I am going in the direction of the north, and I'm going away from the south. So as I evolve towards non-violence, towards peace, I may not reach that ultimate goal of total nonviolence and total, you know, like say Mahavir was or some of the great saints were. But as far as possible in my life, I should avoid inflicting distress on others, you know, of any kind, avoid hurting others, avoid, whether it's by my thought, by my speech, by my actions. So reverence for life. The second one is generosity. And we find that in the world today, generosity is there, but it is at the same time, there is a, so much of non-generosity, stealing from others, you know, taking over others' land, taking over others' property, you know, just taking others' life. You know, the idea of that might is right, you know, that the one who is powerful can do whatever he or she wants. And so generosity can be of three kinds. You know, giving can be of three kinds. One is the material gift. You know, somebody's poor, they need help, so I help them with money, or I give them my old clothes, or I go to a nursing home and spend time with, you know, with somebody who's lonely, or I go to a church and volunteer, or a library, so I volunteer. So I can give my time, I can give my money, I can give my labor, you know, somebody's building a house, Habitat for Humanity. So that is all generosity, and that is good. The second generosity is where you teach that person to improve and make that person better. They say if you give somebody fish, you can feed him for a day. But if you teach him how to fish, you can feed him for a lifetime. So the gift of knowledge is even better than a material gift, where I can, if I can help somebody to become literate, you know, somebody who is illiterate, I can teach that person to read and write. Maybe that person doesn't speak English, is an immigrant. And so then that person can become a responsible member of society, contribute. So the gift of knowledge, teachers and professors, you know, should be respected, because the gift of knowledge is the highest gift that one can give. So that is the second gift, where you teach that person to be self-sufficient. The third is the gift of non-fear. The gift of non-fear. Now that is very interesting gift. How can you make a person fearless? In fact, you know, God has 1,000 names in our scriptures. You know, the God has 1,000 names. And of course, there's a lot more than thousands and thousands of names. But the one of the name is called Abhayapradam. Abhayapradam. One who grants fearlessness. Abhaya means fearlessness. Pradam means one who grants. Abhaya Pradam. So spirituality or religion makes us fearless, because there are two things, aspects of that. One is that I realize that this mighty power, this force that runs the whole universe and every supports everything, is with me at all times. And when this mighty force is with me, why, what do I have to be afraid of? I become totally fearless, because the Lord is in me, the Lord is with me at all times. The second aspect that we often talk about here is that, how do I become fearless? By realizing that I am that spiritual consciousness. I am that spirit. I am that consciousness. I am that infinite power that is described as Om, that is described as Father in heaven. And he and I are one, and I am in fact not this body, I am not this mind, I am not this intellect, I am not these desires. And when I am that consciousness, then no matter what you do to my body, you're not doing to me. You hurt me, you may criticize me, you may insult me, you may abuse me, you may be angry towards me or hatred, but you cannot touch me, because I am none of these. And once you have identified with that, then no matter what kind of illness comes, if there is cancer, if there is my leg has to be chopped off, you know, God forbid. But it's not that you don't take care of the body. You take care of the body. You go to the doctor, go to the hospital. But if in the end, when you see the body declining, you are then become fearless, because death has no fear. For a person who has understood that he or she is the self, then that person can cheerfully go to the cross and be crucified without, you know, without even a trace of sorrow or a trace of depression. So that is the beauty of this knowledge, that it makes us totally fearless. And that is the highest knowledge that one can get. is to realize that we are that self. We are that self. And so giving these three things, giving materially, giving knowledge, and then giving fearlessness. And correspondingly, one should not try to make others afraid of us, because that is a sign of power, that, you know, so many people are afraid of me, or a boss, or a supervisor. Yeah, you need to have discipline, but not through fear, but through right understanding. And vice versa, one should not take from others. You know, do not take what doesn't belong to you. Do not steal. Do not. So that is also an important part of generosity. Then they talk about overindulgence. And in this particular article, mostly the teacher talked about sexual, you know, overindulgence, where sex is basically an expression of love, you know, between a man and a woman when they get to know each other and they love each other and they respect each other. So it should arise out of love, arise out of respect, arise out of a feeling of closeness. But when it becomes just casual, or when it becomes uncontrolled, or when it becomes, and it starts from movies, it starts from TV, it starts from the internet, where they, if you start from the soap operas, if you watch the soap operas, they all work on the premise of infidelity. You know, everything is related to that. And so they say that one should love and respect one's partner. One should have a feeling of regard for one's partner. And that is very, very important. And then only the commitment for life. That's why they say marriage is a union between two families, especially in India. When they get married, the entire family from both, even here also, the families come and they are witness. So it is a union of two families, which means that it is something taken very seriously. And that has to be emphasized to the children. They just, you know, don't go to Las Vegas and sign the paper in front of the notary public and, you know, they're married. But the importance of that should be emphasized and should be understood. And vice versa, also overindulgence in any other thing, you know, parties and just over abusing one's body or mistreating one's body or overwork. Even overwork is a form of mistreatment of the body. One should get enough rest. One should get enough exercise. One should have time for relaxation, and one should be give the gift of time, you know, because we find that people who are working constantly and they don't have time for themselves, they don't have time for their families. There was this story about this man who was a multimillionaire, very rich, and worked very hard and was always working. And for his son, he would buy anything. They wanted a new car, you know, whatever. I mean, anything and everything, you know, whatever the child wanted was ready. And one day he asked the child, "What do you want for your birthday?" And he wrote down, he said, "I want you. Today I want you to just spend the day with me. Don't go to work." Because this person had never had this idea, you know. So this was a wake-up call for him when he realized how much he had sacrificed in the process of working. Yeah, he was providing for his family, but then the precious commodity of time he was not giving. So that is called overindulgence, where you overindulge in work, where you don't have time for speaking and listening deeply. Actually, these are all connected. All five of them give us the same message. It is just five precepts, but they all are very closely connected to each other. Because how can speaking hurt, or how can speaking, it says they should speak the truth. You should say things that do not hurt. You should either don't speak, or if you can, speak things that are peaceful, that cause peace, that promote harmony, that do not hurt anybody, that are not violent, that are not, you know, unnecessarily critical. Yeah, you can make suggestions for improvement, but just criticizing or putting people down or belittling them or making them feel that they are inadequate is also a form of violence, and one has to be very careful. And false speech can be many ways. One is that something is black and you call it white, you know, that this you didn't do it, but you say you did it, or you did it and it go when you deny it. So that is one. The second form of false speech is exaggerating. You know, you exaggerate your talents and you exaggerate your abilities and you exaggerate your, you know, or accounts of whatever happened. The third is speaking with a forked tongue, what the Indians used to call forked tongue, where You say one thing to one person, and then you say something else to somebody else. And then the fourth, of course, is spreading lies and gossip about others. So these things have to be avoided. One has to be very careful about speaking the truth, speaking what is pleasant. There is a very famous prayer. He says, Bhadram karne bhi shrunuyam devaha. O Lord, may we hear only that what is auspicious. But to hear what is auspicious, you have to speak auspicious. Because the person who speaks, he hears it first. Whatever I'm saying, I'm hearing it before any of you. So you have to speak words that is auspicious. Only then you will hear what is auspicious. The second half of that is mindful listening. Because in this world, we find that there is communication, but there is no listening. You know, we have million methods of communication. You can communicate by cell phone, by text message, by email, by Twitter, by Facebook. It goes on and on. I know half of them I don't even know, these methods of communication. You can't keep up with them. But we find that there are so many means of communication, but people don't really talk. People don't really have time to sit and listen to what the other person has to say. They're just furiously sending text messages and emails, and people are sitting at our lunch table in our surgical center. Everybody at lunchtime is just texting somebody else. You know, the person next to you, you don't have time to even talk or say hello. There is a living person next to you, and nobody is looking at everybody. Everybody's eating and people have no time. They have no time. You know, the husband or wife are sitting next to each other and they're either watching TV or texting somebody or on the computer or emailing. And there is a living, breathing, person next to you, and we have no time. So listening is very, very important, where you sit down and listen to that person. And it starts with mindfulness. It starts with being aware of who I am and being aware of where I am. And one has to have an open mind, because one can learn from every situation. If your mind is closed, then you are not ready to listen. Even when the other person is talking, all you're doing is preparing your response. You're not even listening. When we go to a teacher, half of the time, why do we not learn enough? We say, I went to the class, but I didn't get anything out of it. Every situation can be a learning experience. Even dealing with a child can be a learning experience. Even, being with a teenager, if your mind is open. This reminds me of a very beautiful story. This person goes to a Buddhist monk and he wants to learn. And so he prostrates to the monk and says, oh, sir, please teach me. So he says, okay. He says, but I have studied a lot. He says, I know this, I know that. I've already read the Tao principles. I've read Confucianism. I've read the German philosophy. I read some Vedanta. I have read teachings of, this and Nietzsche and all these, So he says, okay, good. So you have come to learn. He says, yeah, I want to learn from you. He says, okay, sit down. We'll have a cup of tea. And then, whatever I can, I'll try my best to teach you, So he sits down. And so the master starts pouring the tea, hot water, and he pours into the student's cup. And he pours and pours and pours, and it fills up, and he keeps on pouring, keeps on pouring, keeps on pouring. And he says, sir, stop, stop. What are you doing? The tea is spilling over. And he still keeps on pouring, 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 till that whole saucer is full of tea and that floor has become... So he says, what are you doing? Why are you keep pouring? He says, you are like that cup of tea, which is already full. And no matter how much more tea I put in that cup of water, it's all going to fall out. It's going to fall onto the plate. It's going to fall onto the floor. So similarly, your mind is so full of arrogance and pride, and that you know so much and you are so smart and you... Yes, it is okay to be confident and okay to be knowledgeable, but one has to approach the teacher with humility, with willingness to learn. So they say, unless your mind is empty, you say. And similarly, when you approach God also, you approach Him, make yourself empty. Say, Lord, I am empty. I am available for you. I am yours. I am your servant. I am nothing. And with that humility, when you approach the Lord and you say, I am available for you, to fill, then only he can come. So they say, make yourself empty, make yourself available to the Lord, make yourself available to the teacher, and only then you can become an instrument of the Lord. Then only then the true knowledge can come. So speaking deeply and listening deeply. The ability to grasp the true situation of whatever I am seeing, whatever, what is the true method, what is the status, what is that. And the last one is ingesting wholesome substances. And I think there are three kinds of foods in the Gita they describe. One is the sattvic, one is the pure food, you know, which is freshly cooked, minimally cooked, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables which are minimally cooked and which are, you know, not too rich in, you know, oily and fried and, you know, fatty and cheese and cream, but which are lightly cooked and which are wholesome, which are healthy, which you can eat. Those are called the sattvic foods. The rajasic foods are the foods that are, you know, very rich, you know, the meats and the foods that are very heavy and very sweet and very, you know, fatty. And so those are called the very spicy in, you know, in India, they eat very spicy foods. So those kinds of foods are the spicy foods are the rajasic, the second kind. And the third and the worst kinds are food that are stale. You know, that includes alcohol and drugs and food that has been, you know, preserved and, you know, cured for 6 months, like these aged cheeses. You have 6 month old cheese and 1 year old cheese and the 14 year old wines. And so foods that have been preserved for long periods of time are considered tamasic. And drugs, obviously, you know, drugs, because again, they numb our mind, they make our mind dull. So avoiding unwholesome things, avoiding alcohol, avoiding drugs, eating food that is healthy, eating food that is wholesome. Talking about alcohol reminds me of a story. There was this guy who came out of the bar and he had had quite a few drinks and he was staggering and could barely walk and he was, you know, somehow he made his way to the parking lot and then he's searching for his car and he doesn't know which one is his car and he looks around and finally he finds his car and he's staggering and walking and then he searches in his pocket and takes out the key and then he doesn't know which key and he tries all of them and finally he finds the key and he's still staggering and he finds the key that opens the car door. As he pulls the car door, the driver's door, this cop approaches him with a flashlight. He says, "Sir, I hope you are not planning to drive." You know, he looked obviously drunk. He said, "Sir, I hope you are not planning to drive tonight." He said, "Of course I am. Do you think I'm in a condition to walk home?" So avoiding, you know, consuming wholesome substances and avoiding foods that are, and that includes not only food. When we talk about ingesting, we only talk about food, but we are constantly ingesting from other sites, from the ears, you know, when you're listening to hateful and gossip and promoting that, or when you're watching things that are, you know, corrupting or debasing others or demoralizing or violence or sex. So promoting those TV shows or reading those books or listening to those particular programs on the radio, we find there are so many people who are just promoting, you know, hatred and, you know, and listening to those people and promoting them. So be very careful what you put in your body and be careful what you put in your mind. Put wholesome thoughts instead of just watching the 11 o'clock news. You know, read a good book at night. Read a good book. Read a book of spirituality. Maybe do some meditation. Listen to some, you know, sweet chants, some names of the Lord. So because what you put in your mind is what will play in your mind. The mind is like a tape recorder. Whatever you record in it, that is what. In a tape recorder, if you put in spiritual music, you're going to get spiritual music. If you put in rock or heavy metal or, you know, violent lyrics, that's what's going to come out. So being consciously aware of what I am putting, because the mind is a very delicate instrument. It can be very easily damaged. It is very fragile. It needs to be taken care of. Just as we take care of our body, We have to take care of our mind. Just as you want your house to be clean and not have dirt and vacuum, so one has to constantly vacuum the mind. Remove the negativities, remove the dirt, and fill the mind with wholesome thoughts and loving thoughts and compassionate thoughts. So these five precepts, when we practice, these are the basics. Then I think we are ready for the higher knowledge, the knowledge of who am I, and the practice of meditation. And so this is the foundation on which our edifice of spirituality is built. So I think these are very important. And I'm sure most of us are practicing these, but I think by reminding ourselves again and again, it reinforces these ideas. I, at least while preparing, you know, I got some ideas also and how one can live. So I think it's good to periodically remind ourselves, even though these may be very basic things, but I think it's good to start applying them.